I now invite Dr. Angela Lowe. Dr. Lowe is a Chancellor's Postdoctoral Fellow and is going to talk to us about Muslim women entrepreneurship in Australia and Canada.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Now, I'm going to share with you some of the results from my research on Muslim women entrepreneurs in Australia and Canada. And unlike the other two earlier speakers, I mean, there are a lot of things that resonate what the two earlier speakers said, you know, in my research here, in one way or another, or you can even insinuate that. Anyway, to start with, I'm often asked this question, you know, are you sure there are Muslim women entrepreneurs? And how many are there, and what do they do? Do they actually own their own businesses? And where do you find them? So, I mean, it just goes to show that Muslim women, you know, entrepreneurs especially, are invisible. So what I'm going to do is to talk about the Muslims in Australia and Canada, give you some statistics, and that will resonate with Job Collins' statistics. The Australian, the background of the Muslim females in Australia and Canada, and also to present some voices of the Muslim women entrepreneurs whom I interview, talking about their entrepreneurship and leadership. So if you look at the entrepreneurship literature, I mean, it's very elitist. It's really, I mean, in reality, we find that most entrepreneurs are not affluent, and many are downright marginal. I mean, but yet the literature portrays, you know, entrepreneurs as very successful, as rich, as highly educated, and running big, big corporations. And when we look at the women's entrepreneurship literature, it's often looked through the white woman's lenses, and it gives less space for women of color. So they emphasize on the glass ceiling. You know, I'm sure most of you know what glass ceiling is when you can't go above, I mean, to the boardroom level or to senior executive level. They are pushed then into entrepreneurship. And in the ethnic entrepreneurship literature, again, it's very male-dominated, and they concentrate on emphasis on class, ethnic barriers, and also lack of access to resources. So in the immigrant women's entrepreneurship literature, I mean, we look at them as being marginalized and hidden. Now I'm going to jump through a lot of things because of the lack of time, and also, you know, my project is very ambitious, and I'm also very ambitious to tell you as much as I could. So anyway, I adopted a qualitative research methodology. And the reason is that I want to hear the voices of the women, the Muslim women. I mean, we say that they're invisible, so we need to hear from them what, you know, I mean, they talk about, what they say about their entrepreneurship. But of course, in qualitative research, we have to acknowledge that it's limited, but I'm not apologizing for this. So let's go with some of them. Census data on the Muslim population in Canada and Australia, with the paranoia about Muslim, you know, taking over the country. You find that the census statistics shows that in Australia they comprise only 1.7% of the population. In Canada it's larger, though this has been growing over the last decade. And in the other European countries, they comprise of a higher level than Australia and Canada. So there are some unpublished Australian census data that I want to share with you on self-employment by religion. If you look at the male, those with of Islamic background, self-employment representation is 19.2%, 12.5%, which is, you know, I mean, lower than the national average. And of course, much also lower than, say, the largest group of religion, I mean, the Catholics and the Christian religion. So, okay. If you look at, again, the educational background of the those who are self-employed by religion, you'll find that they do not fall very far behind. And in for the female group, you know, they are higher educated than, say, the other religion. Okay? So we find that there's a high concentration of Muslim women entrepreneurs who are highly educated. Self-employed by birthplace, in terms of participation again in self-employment, we find that those, I'm looking at North Africa and Middle East because that's where the higher percentage of Muslim population in Australia, 16.9% for female and 34.4%. And it's similar to China, I would say, but much higher than the other, from much higher than Australia. Okay. So I'm sorry that I'm jumping through this, and I'm trying to pick up some of the data. But in any case, okay, let's look at Australia in terms of groups from other religion, the age group composition. What I want to say is that they are from the economic active group, you know, the higher concentration here. Okay. So, okay, I think I will run out of time because I want to share with you the voices of the women. But in terms of the employment participation by industry, this is similar to what Jock has presented. Retail trade, there's a higher concentration here. Accommodation and food services. But there's also a high concentration in education and training, and healthcare and social services. Okay. Employment by industry, most of the males are concentrated in construction, in transport, and in postal warehousing. Okay. For women, in accommodation and food services, and in professional services and healthcare. These are the three main areas. Now, this is very interesting in terms of the income, all right? The weekly income by religion, there's a high concentration. I mean, they are in the lower income band. Right? Now, I think the next slide I have will show that those in entrepreneurship, or rather, in my research, those in entrepreneurship, you know, earns a high income. Self-employed, okay? You find that there's a high percentage here, 10.5% has a high income. Just now I showed only 0.7%. Okay. So in that case, entrepreneurship, you know, provides them a better career choice than, than being employed. Okay, now I come to my study sample. I interviewed, in-depth interviews with 30 women entrepreneurs and 30 in Australia and 20 in Canada. And this is the breakdown of the marital status, because most of the Muslim women are married. In fact, very few are single. The Canadian one, all my Australian data, they're married, but the Canadian sample, there's some single. And why I show marriage is because it has an implication on how women juggle between work, entrepreneurship, and family. So in terms of age group comparison, there's quite a widespread of age group. Education level, we find that most of my Canadian samples are concentrated with this high education level. They all have bachelor's or graduate diploma degrees. And also with the Australian sample, they're also educated with certificates, bachelor's, and also postgraduate. Okay. Now the kind of businesses between the Australian sample and the Canadian sample, we find that most of them are in the accommodation, cafe, restaurants, retail trade, personal services, and health and community services. In my Australian sample, it's more diverse, but again, the concentration in health and in retail accommodation. So I don't have the Canadian sample, because in the Canadian 2006 census, they don't collect data by religion, breakdown by religion. But just looking at the Australian sample against the ABS census, we find that, you know, it's quite a good spread in terms of my sample against the spread in the ABS census. Now, okay, this is the interesting part of the research, is to look at the entrepreneurship and the leadership. This was, the premises of my research is that when women are given economic independence, especially marginalized women, as you know, the Muslim women are, when they're given economic independence, they benefit. Okay, they can make changes to their lives. There's impact on the families and also impact on the communities. And then that's where I try to marry and look at the leadership angle of how, what is the impact of the entrepreneurship and how, what are the outcome of the entrepreneurship and how they use the entrepreneurship to benefit, you know, themselves and society. So here are some voices about, we know or we often hear in terms of we have this perception that there's male domination in the Muslim community. And this is confirmed by some of the voices that I heard amongst the Muslim women entrepreneurs. And she said, one of the first things I've got to tell you, Angeline, when I went to on the research, is that men don't take us seriously. Okay? Right? And this is definitely has implication on policy, because, you know, when women enter entrepreneurship, are they taken seriously? Are they taken seriously as partners in business? You know, that they're running serious businesses as a career choice. So she gave me an example, which I think is not necessary to go through, but what she did was she applied for a grant. But at that time, that's for her Muslim organization, women's organization. But at that time, she couldn't apply under her organization yet, because they were still in the formative stage. So she went to the male organization and said, can we apply the grant under you? You know, and the grant was just to get money to buy TV for the community. But they got the grant, but the men refused to give them the use of the TV. So, because they say, men think that we know better. You know, you women don't need to watch TV. Just an example. But anyway, when I look at how, you know, entrepreneurship and change leadership comes in terms of community contribution, the women say, my faith drives me to contribute positively to the community. Now, this is important because, you know, we assume that women are subservient, they stay at home, and, you know, they're just within the home boundaries. But they, actual fact, you know, move out of that space. And they say that I have to use, you know, what I have, my faith, and also my position as a businesswoman to contribute to my community. And so they contribute in terms of educating, like for this woman, educating others in various matters, because they are looked upon as leaders. And they also build bridging capital. Like, for example, this particular woman entrepreneur, she said, I'm on the board for the organizers of a street festival in Lakemba, you know? And she said that I help with community work. I help to organize this street festival every year. And so I put on my yellow T-shirt like all the other volunteers, and then I wear a skivvy underneath and a matching scarf, and I think I look good. So, she has the confidence, you know. She said, you need to be part of the community to be united and help each other. We just can't think of ourselves. And this contrary to some of the thinking that they are very insular, you know. I mean, Muslim people, they gather amongst themselves. This contradicts that. And they consciously, as women entrepreneurs, build bridges. And they also build the bonding capital in terms of being looked upon, you know, by other women and other women coming to them with problems that they have. And one of the things that they emphasize very, very strongly in the interviews is that there's nothing wrong with women being in front. because we're talking about women leaders, you know, they're seen as women leaders in the communities. He said, it's the culture, not the religion. There's nothing in Islam that says that men first and women second. Nothing in Islam says that women should be hidden. So, and this is very, I mean, funny in a way. He said, in the house, I'm number two. Yet, you know, she's able to see, you know, still culturally conditioned that she's number two at home. And my husband is number one. If my husband says something, I have to listen. He does a lot for me with this kind of relationship. But who cares who is number one or number two? When you go out, I'm number one. If I lead 60 or 70 men, I'm still number one. Yeah. So in a way, you know, I mean, they dichotomize their lives. And so she said that, but yet men and women are the same. And she said, I really feel sorry that a lot of our women in our community, they still feel they are number two. So there's some contradiction here. And the views on leadership, I mean, you can hear this in some of the leadership literature, if you are familiar with that. He said, I'm a leader of my family. I'm a role model. As a leader, you're a role model. I'm a role model to my children. And so that's where the entrepreneurship, you know, impacts back on their families. Because, you know, they are being employed, they're doing something, they're contributing, they're making profits, they're earning money to support their children. They say, I'm a role model to my children. And I'm a good mentor to others. And also in leadership, you know, there's always a team, right? I'm a business owner, but that doesn't mean that, you know, I mean, people have to cooperate with me all the time, you know, but we are a team, we work as a team. So you also have to have a lot of courage and strength being a Muslim woman entrepreneur. And this woman also said, I want more women out in front. That means they are going to support other women entrepreneurs. They say, I want them more out to the front, more to show that we can do things. Don't listen to the man. It doesn't matter if it's husband or son or father. She said, if I have listened to my husband, I won't be anywhere. For example, you know, my children won't achieve anything. I wouldn't have achieved anything. Okay, so they realize the importance of being economically independent. So with that, I think my time is up. I end here, but I think we can open it to discussion. And this is the research project I'm currently engaged in.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. A number of really interesting points there. Who'd like to start? Gentleman there, yes, sir.
You speak about Muslim women, but a lot of the popular press gives us the impression that in some Muslim countries, women aren't even allowed to go out by themselves, let alone be entrepreneurs. Is it that the Muslim women who migrate to Australia come from countries that do not practice that, or is it that when they come here, they break free a bit from the restriction that they have in their own country?
I think both. You see, I mean, my sample covered women from Iran, Iraq, even Somali, you know. And they find that in Australia, there's a certain freedom. They can do something. But yet, there's still the cultural pullback. Right? But then, in terms of policies, I always look at that. The policy implication is when we encourage women, we should encourage more women to enter into entrepreneurship, to be economically independent, so that then they can discover, you know, another world where they can contribute. And to be able to be part of the economic society in Australia.
Mm. If I don't mind answering, can we just add to that and say that it's not correct that women in conservative Muslim countries are necessarily not able to engage in trade. There are sounding women who run multi-million dollar businesses. They don't do it from the front desk, they do it through an agent, but they still control the business. And you know, you're in Southeast Asia, many women who are very engaged in business.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yes.
Did you notice any difference between women identifying themselves as a Muslim, more or less like following the Islam, or Muslim women in a secular way? They're Muslim by religion, but they live their life as a secular person. Did you see any differences in the role?
I did fine-tune that, but just to base on, you know, my recollection, sorry, of the interviews that I was engaged in. I did have a mix of women in very traditional, culturally traditional Muslim women, and the rest who are more secular, as you have said, you know. And I would say that those who are more traditional will be, for example, the person who say, you know, at home my husband is number one, you know, and I'm number two. So, but outside, you know, they have a different persona. Yeah.
Do you think that your study talking about leadership about Muslim is influenced by the? It depends on the year of the woman come to Australia, or also. Also depending on the cultural background. For example, Chinese women, for example, not Australian women, they always say that, well, husband is a breadwinner in the previous time, right? But after the feminist theory and empowerment theory come to this world, so we encourage women more go outside than inside. So that means influence the Muslim women to go outside than inside as well. So do you think this is related to the societal changes or societal changes?
I would say definitely the environment influences, you know, behavior. And so women, say even a traditional woman who's kept at home, you know, will be exposed to the opportunities or aware of opportunities either through the media or through the children, you know, or through the neighbors and so forth, or when they go shopping, they are aware of the opportunities. And so the environment, definitely the Australian environment, will empower them or influence the way they choose their career choices. But the thing is also, it depends on them, whether they have the capacity to do so, the educational background, the opportunities, the skills that they have. You know, these are some of the other considerations. And that's why you find that most of them are concentrated in accommodation, in retail trade, you know, in petty retail trade or in food services, because these are things, the skill sets that they have.
When you're talking about your samples, right, a lot of women, they involve different industries. Do they self-develop the industry or whether they inherited the industry of the family or anything?
Oh, most of them, I would say, all of them set up their own businesses. No inheritance in that sense. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Angeline, thank you for some interesting project. But as I heard you talking, it struck me that you were talking about Muslim women entrepreneurs, but you were also talking about gender relations. And I'm just wondering if you aren't mixing the two. You know, whether, you know, is it a religious issue that, you know, people question whether, you know, women can become entrepreneurs and can have a public face, or whether it's really, you know, the gender relationships in the family where, you know, that's also an issue that's being questioned. Do you see what I mean? It
yes.
seems to me there's a bit of an illusion there, and I'm
yes.
not sure whether
it's
you can separate that out.
Yes, I know where you're coming from, but the thing is that it's hard to try to separate everything. Okay, because it's part of their whole lives, you know. It's the whole culture is so embedded in them. That's why I say that, you know, at home, you know, they have a different persona than when they're outside managing the business. That they still continue on their culture and still, you know, that's I mean, a lot of other studies in terms of literature, women actually do much more work. You know, being entrepreneurs, they go back home, they're still slaves to their husbands and slaves to their homes. You know, they still have to prepare their meals. So when we talk in terms of policies again, where, you know, how do you encourage women to grow their businesses? You know, they hardly have any time. They hardly have any time to do the business networking, you know, if they can do that, you know. Because they have to be home, they have to be cleaning, they have to be cooking for the children. They still, you know, have to take care of their families.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not clear what the you know, where the religious
mm-hmm.
issues come in.
Yes,
mm-hmm. I think that's what's
yes.
important.
Can I just ask you, the sample that you took, 20 women from Australia and
30 from Australia, 20 from Australia, all right. Canada. Mm-hmm.
So the sample that you took, are these women born and brought up in Australia or are they migrants?
No, they're migrants. They're talking about migrants. They're all migrants.
So how long have they been? Was there a criteria? Like how long have they been?
No, there wasn't a criteria in how long they were there, but most of them would have been there for at least 5 years.
I find statistics and interpretation very valuable. Now, I've come from Malaysia, which is a great dominant
Muslim
country.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And being there 50 over years, I've had a lot of dealings with the Muslim people. And it's true that the women in business, and like the statistics I know is based on Australia, but more often than not, within the family structure, if they are married, the husband must first recognize that. I mean, if the husband is a very domineering type, the chances of the woman surviving, succeeding in business is very slim. And that's where they break up, the marriages break up. For the successful Muslim women in Malaysia, with a dominant husband, the marriages break up. But when they, that means, behind a successful woman, there is this supportive man in the Muslim society. Mm. Otherwise, I see that.
Yes. Thank you.
The background of the women's samples in Australia, like what was it? Background, it's Israel background.
Sorry, the question is what's the background? Could you say the question, sorry?
What was the background of the women in their ancestral background?
The women are immigrants from different countries.
Which
so
countries were those? Because I guess when we talk about Islam and Muslim
yes.
women, often we think of the Middle East.
Yes, yes.
And that mm-hmm. itself comes up with other issues there.
True,
so I'm just
yes.
wondering what the background
it's,
of these
women yes. Yes. I mean, when you look at women in general, Muslim women, you know, they're very diverse. It depends on where they come from in terms of their perspective of and also how they practice their religion. So the samples, we have a mix from people from Southeast Asia, from Indonesia, from Malaysia, from the Middle East, and from even from UK, yes.
Just following on from there, do you in your work break down then by origin? I mean, is it valid to generalize across Muslim women if there are such differences between
mm-hmm.
those from
yes.
different countries?
Yes, I'm not aiming to generalize. What I'm saying is that from this group of women, this is what I found. You know? In terms of articulating what they say, there isn't really very much difference in terms of, you know, their, this woman, I mean, the perception of her leadership, you know, against the other women. There's not very much difference. But I, again, you know, that was not my objective to try to differentiate that.
Did you make a comparison with non-Muslim women from the same cultural background? Because I would say, in one of the Middle Eastern countries, you can see the same women from a different religion have the same reflection what you said here. So what's the difference here as it was raised before? What's the value of Islam as a religion on the entrepreneurship? I didn't see a clear distinction.
Yeah. It's not the aim of my study to see, you know, what is the aim of Islam, you know, or how Islam is on religion.
Muslim women.
Yeah.
And then you get a general impression about women from the Middle East. And my assertion is women from the Middle East, regardless of the religion, they have the same cultural attitude. And that's also the family structure there. So I didn't see the effect of the religion on the entrepreneurship in the women as you presented.
Yeah, perhaps part two, then I may be trying to maybe extract that. And also part two, part three, I could compare Muslim women entrepreneurs with another group of Muslim women I study, which are Asian-born women entrepreneurs.
Okay, we've got one last question over here.
Yes. Anthony, are you aware of, there's a research done by Clive Kessler some years ago, actually, on UNSW. He studied a Kelantan Chinese woman, which is a state in Northwest Malaysia, and despite it's a very Muslim state, the woman has always had the entrepreneurship. In fact, most of the business are always conducted by the woman. So despite being Muslim, you know, that cultural Southeast Asian one is quite different from, you know, the Muslim from other states.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for pointing that out.
You might want to have a chat with the client that says you want to something.
Yes, okay. I mean, the Clanton's movements, again, we are looking at immigrants here,
yeah.
Where the dislocation is it? So it's different, yes. Thank you.
I'm sensing that the audience is starting to get ready to rush for their buses.
Yes.
So maybe we should hold it there. Can I thank you very much, Angela?